are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, October 11th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing my traditional soft-collared shirt today, also with a sweater. There's a slight chill in the air. On the program today, Benjamin Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon Show will be joining us. Also on the program, on the day that his movie releases, Tim Heidecker will be here. What's the name of the movie again?
Mr. America.
America. Also on the program today, Giuliani's pals, who helped investigate Joe Biden in Ukraine, arrested before trying to leave the country on a one-way ticket. Meanwhile, impeachment hits new highs in the polls, and the former Ukrainian ambassador meets with the Intel Committee today. Gordon Sondland agrees to testify. Fiona Hall, former Soviet advisor to Donald Trump, also agrees to testify. All this against Trump's wishes. Dam breaking, floodgates opening, whatever metaphor you want to use. Speaking of which, climate change is here. 2.5 million people left without power, as California's PG&E spends its cash on shareholder distributions instead of power grid upkeep. Meanwhile, a UN Security Council splits on condemnation of Turkey's Syria invasion, with the U.S. and Russia refusing to condemn it. EPA weakens lead drinking water protections because...
It's good for you.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a new study shows that exposure to air pollution leaked to increase in violent crime.
Builds character.
State Department morale plummets as a career and senior advisor to Mike Pompeo quits in disgust. Meanwhile, Trump, mad at Fox TV's polls on impeachment. So, of course, our chief law enforcement official in the country visits Rupert Murdoch. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. It is Friday. Thank you for being with us. Just a tremendous amount of information in terms of the impeachment inquiry that is happening. We will talk about that with Ben Dixon in a moment, as well as talking about the Turkish invasion of Syria, where we have reports of hundreds, I think, of Kurdish civilians already killed, which could just be the beginning, frankly. But we will get to that later in the program. The exposure to air pollution linked to increase in violent crime. People will know that for a while it was my bailiwick to talk about. It was actually a piece that Kevin Drum had written that brought together a bunch of research that showed that crime dropped precipitously, not just in this nation, but around the world, about 20 to 25 years after lead gasoline was outlawed in specific places. And so far, as far as I can tell, it has been the best answer as to the question as to why crime has dropped so precipitously across the country. There are certain areas where it is not at the same rate, but to the extent that there is any type of trend across the country, I mean, the murder rates in most of the big cities around the country have dropped significantly. Now, the other issues, of course, are lead as it gets into you through water, and the EPA has just made that a little bit easier for at least people living in poverty. I mean, let's be honest. When we talk about these things, they impact people living in poverty far more than anyone else. And I imagine also you can find lots of deposits of lead paint still that have not been remediated in many urban centers, particularly the older ones. But this latest study just looks at air pollution more generally. And, you know, I'll just top line it for you. It their findings basically are, this is as discussed by, I guess, one of the researchers from Colorado State University. Story is, when you're exposed to more pollution, you become marginally more aggressive. So those altercations, some things that may not have escalated, do escalate. That's basically it. And that's they don't in the research show how that happens necessarily, but they're only looking statistically, showing a strong correlative relationship between such crimes and levels of air pollution. Now, there needs to be a lot more study about this, but just one more unintended consequence of clean air. Not just the health benefits, as you know, as we understand health, but also benefits in terms of like people's brains and their ability to socialize with other people. So there's that. Also, moving on, let's, as you know, Steven Crowder is, you know, is still reeling from the revelations that he got cold feet and was afraid to debate me at the Blanket.com and on Gavin McGinnis's show. And so different celebrities have been weighing in on this. And I have to say that I really appreciate, I want to do the other one, not this one. And I just want to say I really appreciate the support from some of these people, many of whom I don't even know. I've never met Scaramucci. I've met Jesse Lee Peterson. My understanding is that was played the other day. Who else did we hear from? Who's the first one that did it?
Tommy Lauren.
Tommy Lauren. I've yet to meet her. Kevin Sorbo. I'm obviously familiar with his work. I've never met him.
Me and him went to the same college.
And I've never met this woman here. But of course I've admired her work since I was younger. I can't remember exactly when I first saw her work, but I give you D. Williams,
Wallace.
Who, excuse me? Oh, D. Wallace. Sorry. who has got a message for Steven Crowder.
Hi, Steven. This is D. Wallace. I was the mom in E.T. And your dad is telling me that there are people bullying you and calling you cold feet because you won't mix it up with this big kid named Sam. And I just want you to know I'm really proud of you for knowing who you are and for really sticking to what you believe about yourself and what's right. That's what E.T. did. He kept his heart open and You know, sometimes when kids make fun of us like that, it's because they feel really insecure within themselves. So you just keep knowing who you are, and you know that your daddy's there loving you and protecting you. And you follow E.T.'s example and just keep your heart open. Good luck, baby. You can do this.
Steven, phone home. Phone home. Phone home.
Wow.
Should we play? Should we do double up, or should we save that one for?
I mean, I'm all for doubling up.
Okay,
and, that was so and heartwarming. And I would say, if we're doing this, we might as well play the Scaramucci one again.
No, well, we don't have too much time, but folks,
we'll watch it later.
It wasn't just that; it was, you know, some people are sweeter than others to Stephen, who has COVID. This is not sweet. This is a little bit disturbing. Why? Steven Crowder would get a message from Chris Hansen. I don't know, but it does raise some questions about Crowder. Let's check in with Chris Hansen from To Catch a Predator.
Hello, Steven. Chris Hansen here of Hansen versus Predators and To Catch a Predator. Maybe I should call you by your secret screen name. Cold Feet 69 doesn't want to debate Sam. Mm-hmm. Very suspicious, very predator-like. Maybe you need these thermal socks here. I use them for catching my predators in the cold weather. Anyway, I was going through some transcripts the other day, Stephen, and it appears that you're afraid to debate Sam. Well, at least that's what he says, and that's what the transcripts say. So I'm going to need you to have a seat, and even if you need cue cards, well, your daddy might be able to help you. Anyway, buck up, sonny boy. Get ready for the debate. I think you can handle it. And remember, I'll be watching. All right, take care.
Yep, so there it is. Stephen, you're getting both sort of like an encouragement and a slight threat.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, good cop, bad cop situation. Stephen, I hope you – I mean, I got to imagine that maybe you'll be looking at these, and I just want you to know that I in no way have solicited any of these superstars to send these messages. And
these aren't all your Hollywood pals?
No, these are not all my Hollywood pals.
Man, every day, every morning I wake up, I'm so excited to know which celebrity is going to jump on the bandwagon today.
There's a lot of people, you know, I guess in the liberal Hollywood elite that are really looking to Steven Crowder to buck up a little bit. We'll see. Folks. Do you have a dog that you rescued? Have you wondered about what breed it is? Well, sometimes it's fun to have a magical mystery pup, but finding out what kind of breed it is can help you provide a better quality life for your furry friend. Embark Dog DNA Test is the best in class dog DNA test. We have had Edie. This is Kelly's, old Kelly. She's not old, but I mean, she was formerly Kelly. Well, she's still Kelly, but,
I was going to say, really,
you know, she used to work on the show and we used to hear about Edie all the time. This is what she had to say about her experience, with Embark. She wrote, "I recently received Edie's results from Embark, and there's so much information about her. She tested clear for all 171 genetic health conditions they screen for, and she's not a carrier or risk for any of the genetic diseases they test for. There's also a full clinical trait report. So much great news, but most importantly, I can provide the report to her vet, which will provide so much information to help Edie's health as she grows up." And we've gotten emails from listeners, one really touching story about just how important their pet was to this guy's brother, and who had some, you know, social issues, and the dog became a huge asset in terms of like him being able to relate to other people, and they could really feel like, by getting a genetic testing, that they were treating this dog, feeding the dog properly, watching screening for the any particular possible diseases the dog would get, so that the dog can live as long of a life as possible with, you know, because they're obviously incredibly close to their dog. Embark's test is worth it. It's the most comprehensive kit on the market. It was developed by doctors and veterinarians. It tests for over 250 breeds and 170 genetic health conditions. Apparently, some competitors can get down to only 12% of a breed mix detection. Embark's DNA test kit is accurate to 5% breed component in a mixed breed's dog's ancestry. And it's fun to know what your dog, you know, your dog ancestry is. But again, it's also another way to provide the optimal health and treatments for your dog. Embark has an exclusive offer for our listeners. Go to EmbarkVet.com. Use the promo code MAJORITY. Save 15% off your dog DNA test kit. That's EmbarkVet, EmbarkVet. EmbarkVet.com, promo code MAJORITY. Check it out. Lastly, before we go to Ben Dixon, here is Donald Trump. Basically, in Minnesota last night, at a rally, and you're familiar with this Coliseum, is that right?
Yeah, Target Center. It's where the Timberwolves play.
And you had a comment to say about how many is that seat?
Probably like 20,000.
And
well, and you'll notice in these clips we play, they don't ever pan up above into the upper deck. And there's another clip floating around Twitter. Maybe we'll play it later. That shows that there wasn't people up there.
I mean, that's he's not getting the number of people at the rallies as they as he used to. That's quite clear. Now maybe his show is just worn off, whatever. But it's an indication that maybe Trump is not as formidable as he once was. But these folks really, really apparently have a problem with refugees.
For many years, leaders in Washington brought large numbers of refugees to your state from Somalia without considering the impact on schools and communities and taxpayers. I promise you that as president, I would give local communities a greater say in refugee policy and put in place enhanced vetting and responsible immigration controls. And I've done that. Since coming into office, I have reduced refugee resettlement by 85%. And as you know, maybe especially in Minnesota, I kept another promise. I issued an executive action making clear that no refugees will be resettled in any city or any state without the express written consent of that city or that state. So speak to your mayor.
Yeah, he sounds a little tired, a little strained, his voice. Meanwhile,
there's also some odd... it could mean absolutely nothing, but a little some odd physicality there. I'll just leave it at that.
A little bit. Meanwhile, on Twitter, somebody writes that Trump, no refugees will be placed in any city or state without the explicit consent of your governor or mayor. So ask your mayor about that. And Jacob Frey, the mayor of Minneapolis, wrote on Twitter, consent given. Immigrants and refugees are welcome in Minneapolis. Good for him. There it is. Donald Trump is speaking to a narrow band of people. I'm not going to say all white people. That's just a coincidence. That's all we can see in the frame. Although they really do plan. They really do, pick and choose who's going to stand behind him at these events, as they do with all politicians. And so there it is. This is what he's going to be running on. And apparently, you know, the treasonous folks who are using this newfangled device called impeachment. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon. Ben?
Sam, how are you, man? So good to be with you.
Great to be with you, too. Thanks for joining us. I am getting a little bit of a feedback on that. I'm not sure from you. I'm not sure what that is, if that's
Yeah, let me see if I can fix that real
quick. Okay.
How's it, Sam?
I think that's better. Yeah, that's better. Great.
Okay, great.
So, Ben, I want to talk about impeachment and Syria. Let's just start with impeachment. It's been it's been pretty stunning. Just starting with, the polling on some level. We're now at a Fox poll came out the other day. 51% of people want Donald Trump, the impeachment inquiry, to go forward, right? And we have a poll from the Washington Post. 58% support the inquiry. 49% support removing Trump already. Only 38% oppose. Fox News, says 51% should impeach Trump and remove him from the presidency. That's Fox News. I mean, so it's hard to know exactly what the numbers are, but the trend is pretty clear. You have a majority of people at this point support impeachment in some fashion or another, and it has been a pretty significant turnaround, a swing in some instances of like 20 points, in other instances like 10. What's your sense?
You know, I think the first thing is that it speaks to the power of the establishment. Nancy Pelosi finally coming on board with impeachment. We saw a big shift just in some of the Democrats who were afraid to step out front. I think you're going to find not only just Democrats coming on board, but you're also finding some Republicans. Of course, you could never expect Republicans to be on board with this fully. The polling shows that there's some Republicans out there, whether they'll admit it publicly or not, they're admitting it to pollsters that they're willing to get rid of the president. And I think what we're seeing, Sam, we're seeing a more erratic behavior from him because of that. You know, he might pretend on Twitter that nothing is happening, but behind the scenes, they know what's going on.
It's pretty fascinating. And I keep using this analogy about what happened when Pelosi signed on was just basically, from just my years as a director, you shoot a subject and the reaction shot is basically you telling the audience how they should respond to what they've just seen.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Nancy Pelosi gave, the American public, the vast majority of whom don't, do deep dives into this, basically gave them a reaction shot, which is, oh, what he just did rose to the level of impeachment. And everybody was like, okay. It's not a hard sell. Right. I mean,
right.
On some level, she was keeping she was suppressing this. And the there's a big question out there now that the Trump administration came back with a letter that was really sort of stunning.
Yeah.
Basically saying they don't believe in impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
Which is I just want this to marinate with people. This is basically saying we don't believe in the separate. It's not like we're finagling it. It's like we don't believe in the separation of powers or the checks and balances, or we don't believe, in the First Amendment. I mean, impeachment is very explicit in the Constitution. And they're saying this is illegitimate because Pelosi has not called for a vote on the inquiry to empower the committees to have subpoena power that they would under impeachment. But that rule changed some time ago, before this session. And she doesn't need to do it. They have the power to subpoena under an impeachment inquiry. And they're just looking for any type of excuse. But it's pretty stunning that they're just going to try and ignore this.
Yeah, what's surprising about this, Sam, is that they are being forced, Nancy Pelosi and Congress, they're going to be forced to use the full power of the Congress here. Donald Trump is going to call, I don't think it's a bluff, but he's going to push them over and over and over again. He's going to block them at every turn because he just does not believe that he's subject to their to checks and balances. He believes that he honestly does believe that he's above the law. I know everyone says that, but we're seeing it in action. And in that kind of environment, while everyone would like to just be able to go to brunch, everyone would just like to have business as usual, they are literally going to be forced to use the full force of Congress. They're going to have to not only issue these subpoenas, but hold people in contempt of Congress, because if they don't, then they are demonstrating and they're complicit with Donald Trump's assertion that the presidency, the executive branch, is above the rest of them.
And the real question is like, how do they enforce this contempt? Now, there is this concept of inherent contempt that Congress has. They have a jail. They can fine people. Mark Pocan came out with floated the other day. We can just stop paying Pompeo until he comes in. I think there's going to be more of that. I spoke to former Congressman Brad Miller the other day. And, you know, part of the problem is the lapse of the Independent Counsel Statute Act doesn't provide for sort of criminal to pursue criminal charges outside of the DOJ. And we have a real major problem at the DOJ right now.
Right.
You know, you have this situation where it's quite clear that Rudy Giuliani is in legal jeopardy. I mean, he is being investigated right now by members of the Southern District of New York. This is a, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern District of New York. This is part of the Department of Justice. You have Rudy Giuliani being investigated for his work in going around Ukraine and trying to develop this narrative about 2016. There's another person who went around on behalf of Donald Trump trying to debunk, you know, the key parts of the Mueller report. And that person is Bill Barr. And that person happens to be in charge of the Department of Justice. So, I mean, he should be recusing himself right now and appointing a special prosecutor like a Robert Mueller again to start investigating Rudy Giuliani. I mean, how do you have the Department of Justice investigating Rudy Giuliani when Bill Barr was part of this whole thing?
Yeah, that's the entire cluster F that we're dealing with here, right? There is the mechanisms are technically in place for them to hold the executive branch accountable, but now we're seeing the real test of it, right? Where do they go from here? How will they implement a contempt of Congress? They're going to have to do something, though. So they're going to have to come up with a strategy of how we are going to address this, because they don't have the option of not doing anything. The option of not doing anything is going to enshrine really a dictatorial executive branch. One that Donald Trump has already hinted towards, that he's already preparing to say that the election in 2020 is not valid. And so if they don't draw the line here and how they do it, that's going to be up to their advisors. That's going to be up to all the machinations that they're going to go through. But they have to do something. They have to respond to Donald Trump's desire, you know, just really asserting himself to be above the law. If Congress does not have an answer to this, then we have a bigger problem on our hand in the long run.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, like, you know, investigating it, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to hold anybody criminally liable at this point. I mean, we're going to wait and see. But certainly investigating it and going through, and even if it's just going through the motions and voting to impeach, sends an important signal. I mean, just to get everybody up to date with what's happened literally in the past 24 hours, you have two associates of Rudy Giuliani who were hired by him, apparently, to do some of the digging up of Biden material in Ukraine. These people apparently were also involved in buying influence from everyone from Pete Sessions to others to further a whole host of agenda items involving the Russians, involving Ukrainian oligarchs, and They're getting charged on federal elections violations. They were about to get on a plane. Apparently, the Southern District of New York, did not want to reveal this. But apparently, they got tipped off in some fashion and were about to take a one-way ticket to Europe. Now, who knows how they got tipped off, right? This is a problem that we have with the DOJ now. And so the Southern District of New York, which must have had these guys under surveillance, went and basically arrested them. Meanwhile, just about 10 minutes ago, the ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, she was the one who was fired because she wouldn't pressure the Ukrainians to dig up stuff on Biden. She says that Trump pressured the State Department to remove her. She just said that in testimony now. The House has subpoenaed Rick Perry, who's involved in some of this, and it's starting to look like Hunter Biden. The big problem with Hunter Biden is that he was actually sitting on a board and preventing buddies of Giuliani and Perry, who wanted to be on that board, to move it in a different direction. They're still digging on that. It was announced today that Gordon Sondland, who was the EU ambassador, or is the EU ambassador, who was sort of like bizarrely named to be in charge of Ukraine, maybe because there was nobody there. They didn't appoint anybody. He has agreed to testify, even though Trump doesn't want him to, because I imagine he's starting to feel like he might have some criminal exposure. We know that that Trump's former Russian advisor, Fiona Hall, is going to testify, and she's going to say that Giuliani was running some type of shadow policy with Ukraine. And Congress has now asked Bill Taylor. Bill Taylor, just to remind people, was one of the guys with Sondland and who was on this email, text message thread about the pressure being applied to Zelensky in Ukraine. Bill Taylor's the one who ended in September by saying, as I said on the phone last night, he's saying this to Gordon Sondland, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign. And then Sondland said, I don't know what you're talking about. The words quid pro quo were never used. I mean, this stuff is like, it's like Fargo, sort of. Like it reminds me of some fumbling criminals. But now it's all out in the open, and it feels like the floodgates have opened now.
So, but that's the thing, though. So, any one single thing that you just listed, right, in the hands of the Republican Party and a Democratic president would have been enough for a full impeachment, and they would have drawn that one detail out. And this is part of Trump's. This is what makes him almost above the law, is that he's the master of just the floodgates. He just pours it out. You'll notice that he made the appeal to China to help with the election or help with the investigation. And he does that intentionally so that it's almost like you thought that was bad. Look at this. And he tries to muddy the water where people just kind of throw up their hands and say, what's the difference? He's, you know, that's really what he's an expert at. And the counterpoint to that is whether or not the Democrats can take any one of his transactions or of his transgressions, rather, and leverage it to the point where we actually can hold him accountable. I think we're headed in the right direction. I did have some concerns about how they're proceeding, whether or not they should only focus on Ukraine. But as the Ukrainian story unfolds, there's just so much there that I think that there may be sufficient enough evidence involved here to actually start holding the president accountable. Now, does that mean a full impeachment and a trial in the Senate? I don't know how this plays out in the long run. But it's there. It's been there. The cookie has been in the cookie jar since day one. But that's how he gets away with it. He just keeps doubling down. And our system is not designed to handle this. And I think that's what we have to answer right now, is how do we handle when democracy puts someone in power who is a direct threat to democracy?
I mean, you know, I have never been one of those people who's taken anything seriously about Donald Trump's not going to leave. But I do think the problem is going to be Bill Barr. And Bill Barr is not going to leave, I don't think, until, you know, until Donald Trump is out there. And I think Bill Barr will go to any lengths to attempt to justify this. And it's just going to be it's going to be nuts to see how this goes down. And I mean, you know, because this is presuming, of course, that if there is a Senate trial, I mean, I think it's a fait accompli at this point that he's going to be impeached. The question is how are the Democrats going to do it? It seems to me that there is no, as far as I can tell, and tell me if you've read something different anywhere or aware of anything different. I don't know if there's a one way to do impeachment. In other words, I don't know if you need to present all 7, 10, 15, 20, 28 articles of impeachment simultaneously. Like, cool. I don't know if you can't say, like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to impeach him on this article right now. We're going to impeach him on extortion and inviting foreign assistance in a political campaign, right? Just in terms of Ukraine. We're going to impeach him on that. And then we're going to start investigation on the next thing. And we're going to impeach him on that. Maybe it's, maybe they find stuff about Turkey. We'll talk about that in a moment. We're going to impeach him on that. And then we're going to impeach him on the emoluments. And then we're going to impeach him on whatever it is, obstruction. And as outlined in the Mueller investigation. And we're going to, and then at the end of that process, we're going to deliver all 8-10 impeachment, counts of impeachment to the Senate. In other words, like, do they have to do this all at once, or can they do it one step at a time, which to me seems like the best course of action, and then send it all to the Senate in April and say, okay, which one of you are going to stand up and vote on these? And it's also going to make it harder for the Republicans because they, I think, you know, they're nervous about this. They don't want to take a vote on this right now. And that's why I think Donald Trump is pushing for this vote, this house-wide vote on whether to have an impeachment inquiry, because he wants to force the Republicans to be on his side. And if he does it now, this is at his maximum leverage point. It's going to get a lot less as more information comes out.
Yeah, Sam, I actually have not heard any strategy like that, anything for or against the validity of that. The critical thing that you said in there is that while they will impeach, investigate, nothing will be delivered to the Senate until everything is delivered to the Senate, because otherwise it will create a fatigue. It will create victory after victory after victory for the president. So, but for them to have a pile of a series of impeachments for them to sort through, number one, that's going to take them some time to do so. But then two, it makes them take a stand to stand behind Donald Trump on issue by issue, not a single overall impeachment, but impeachment of this. And actually, I think that is a brilliant strategy. And all jokes aside, I hope somebody's listening to this episode. If they don't have that strategy in place already, I think that definitely would be the way to go.
So meanwhile, let's talk about what's taking place with northern Syria. It is, I mean, we could be on the precipice of a massive ethnic cleansing, arguably genocide. With Turkey going in, there's 2 million Kurds, I think, living in that area. They have already basically announced their intentions to occupy, but first they need to, obviously, they're going to bomb the hell out of these people. And there's already been a couple hundred civilian casualties. I mean, this is on top of, we should say, the Syrian civil war has taken tens upon tens of thousands of lives. I mean, more. And it's been horrific. The point here is that the Kurds were basically promised by the United States that we would protect them. And we had a a deal with them, essentially, and we've right. abandoned them. And at the UN Security Council, there was an attempt to condemn Turkey's moves. And as far as I can tell, two of the members of the Security Council voted to not condemn. Each voting member has a veto power on the Security Council. And those two countries were the United States and Russia. I mean, you know, who knows?
I knew who it was before you said it. Before, well, I didn't even know that happened, but I knew it was going to be the United States and Russia who vetoed it.
I mean, you know, I don't know if Donald Trump is, you know, I don't think that Donald Trump is a puppet of Vladimir Putin, but he certainly does a lot of things that are in Russia's best interest. Now, that's not necessarily yeah. bad for the world. It's maybe just a tremendous coincidence. But what's interesting, too, is that it has come out. New York Times had a story yesterday, I guess, that Rex Tillerson and Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani were in the Oval Office. This is before Giuliani was Trump's personal lawyer. Giuliani was looking for the release of a jailed client who was an Iranian-Turkish gold trader as part of a potential prisoner swap with Turkey. Now, people got to remember, too, that Flynn had a lot of involvement with Turkey, too. He was basically on their payroll and not only lobbying for them, but was talking about possibly kidnapping this guy, Gulen, who is a religious mm-hmm. leader. I mean, you know, I think there's arguments as to whether this guy has been up to, you know, sort of like some shady stuff with some of his charter schools. But it doesn't necessarily warrant a extraordinary rendition by the chief national security advisor of the country
right.
in some type of like Rambo style operation with his son. I mean, this is just bizarre stuff. But Giuliani and Michael Mukasey, also a piece of garbage. And similarly, I remember when he was appointed attorney general under the Bush administration, you had the same establishment types going like, he's a straight shooter. And as soon as he got in, everybody was like, oh, wait, no, he's not. And same thing with, you know, there was a lot of Bill Barr talk like that as well. Just a side note, legal profession needs to deal with itself on some level. But, I mean, it's true. There's some real problem there that they can't make assessments about this. This is just sort of nuts how deep this may run. And the idea that this is the only, you know, this is the one time that Donald Trump's administration just sort of stepped out of line. I mean... Right?
it's as sad as it's comical when you think of the actual cost, right? Actual lives that are being taken right now as we speak. That's the tragedy of this, right? And the depth to which these ties go, like where does it really end? Because you did bring that back to my remembrance about Michael Flynn and his deal with this this covert extradition that they were trying to do, which actually was tied directly to the Kurdish movement there, insurrection there in Turkey. I'm not sure how deep this goes, right? But before we even think about how deep it goes, really just think about how callously and carelessly the president of the United States opened up the floodgates, not only to the possibility of genocide and ethnic cleansing, but also to the resurgence of ISIS, right? And the fact that in a whim, it was almost like a whimsical call, phone call, that he just turned the world on its head overnight. That's number one. But then number two, it does look like there's a level of connections that go so deep that you have to really take a step back and look at this holistically. Like, you know, while Turkey is a NATO ally, with Donald Trump in office and the way Erdogan carries himself, you really have to think about the possibility that there is a desire for a realignment away from NATO in favor of Putin. Now, this isn't to say that Donald Trump, like you said, this is not saying Donald Trump is doing the bidding of Vladimir Putin. And this is not to say that NATO is above reproach, that we can't criticize NATO. But as you look at everything as it's laid out, if you remember 2015, when Turkey accidentally or quote unquote accidentally shot down a Russian fighter, you know, you would have thought that would have created a divide, but it actually opened up the door for closer relationships between Turkey and Russia. And so we have a lot of things that are going on in the background that paint a bigger picture of something that's happening, right? However strategists or analysts want to categorize it, something is happening. But the immediate result of it is the fact that thousands of people are potentially going to be killed. As we speak, they're dying.
And we should make something clear, too. This is not Donald Trump taking our troops out of Syria. This is Donald Trump just moving anywhere from 100 to 1,000 troops to a different part of Syria. That's all that's going on here. No troops are coming home. There are troops just moving around, and that's it.
And Sam, can I also point to that point? They are close enough to the actions that they are now reporting their frustration and their anger watching their comrades die.
Yep.
Right. They are close. These American troops have not come home, but they're close enough to the action where they want to help the people that they have been fighting side by side with, but they cannot because of orders from the president of the United States. Now, this is an interesting thing, right? We're going to see a huge divide because of this. We're already starting to see it with the Republican Party, Lindsey Graham finally growing a backbone, and we'll see to what extent he actually grew one. But, you know, even in terms of the military in general, it is the Republican Party and it's the Republican president that has betrayed not only our allies, but the spirit, if you celebrate that type of thing, the spirit of the American soldier. He is betraying it, and they are seeing it. They're tasting it. They could see their comrades dying, and there's nothing they can do about it. The long-term ramifications of this, obviously the most important thing are the lives and the genocide, but also like the politics of it. Like, how does this actually play out for the Republican Party in the long run when they are actively betraying the troops?
Well, I mean, if the Democrats can't win in these circumstances,
to dissolve the party.
Well, I mean, it's not just a function of the Democrats' failure. Now, I think it'll be largely a part of that, you know, like it's just. You know, to the idea that there isn't like a clear, like just the way that they're handling impeachment with Nancy Pelosi sort of driving with the brakes on. It's like, you know what? If you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. You just got to go for it.
Yeah.
At this point, if you're doing it. And of course you had to. So once you're forced into this situation, you've got to reorient yourself and come up with your plan B and, you know, begin to provide. You know, just as people who want to report on this stuff, I'm just wondering, like, why is there not a committee, a staffer who is basically providing, you know, creating some type of website with a clearinghouse of all the information that they're doing? Like, you know, like why do we have to go to disparate places to find out like where all the deadlines are for Rudy Giuliani's subpoena, for Rick Perry's subpoena, for Pompeo's subpoena? Like, I want to know when these things are deadlines, like, you know, like manage this process. With all that said, it's also quite possible that our country is full of too many people who have no problem with this stuff. And they just don't care. They just don't care. I mean, I just saw a report. There's a Wall Street Journal article today. About people going to reporters going to these counties that have voted Republican for I don't know, for decades, and but they're getting hit hard by all the trade war stuff. And the quote was something like, "We don't know if we can afford to vote for Donald Trump again." And it's like, what?
Right.
Like, you're willing to take a beating in terms of your own sort of like subsistence to vote for him, but you're just not sure you can take this much of a beating. You know, like the people are voting based upon these sort of like very odd cues, you know, and we can imagine what those cues may be, you know, even in the most sort of like favorable light, they are, they're terribly misguided. You know, that's in the most favorable light, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say about that, Sam, is that there's a level of high transcends everyone's best interest, and we're seeing that's what we're living in. Like, there's no way to explain being willing to vote for someone who you can see materially damages your well-being except for the fact that they have some sense of utility. They have some sense of victory that they get for voting for their red team or their blue team. But you said a mouthful, man, that really makes a person just take a second and really think about how screwed up we are as a country when we can see, and we see it all the time. Like, this is no surprise. We saw it with the first images that came out of the Syrian civil war. We see it now with the betrayal of the Kurds. With school shootings on a regular basis, like, yeah. we get desensitized to a whole lot of things and we don't do anything about it, while simultaneously we're hypersensitive about things that are kind of irrelevant, right? So as long as we can go to brunch, everything will be fine. Meanwhile, the world is starting to burn around us.
Ben Dixon, the Benjamin Dixon Show, people check it out on YouTube or go to BenjaminDixonShow.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
BenjaminDixonShow.com or YouTube is fine.
Ben, always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Oh. Right, take care, Sam.
Right. We're losing him a little bit there towards the end, folks. Sorry about that. All apologies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move on to the next part of our program. We're going to be talking to Tim Heidecker of Tim and Eric's Awesome Show from... Decker from On Cinema, At the Cinema, and now Mr. America. We'll be right back. Wait, was that? I thought we were going to play I Am a Cuck.
I couldn't find it.
What?
Damn it. It's not on the SoundCloud anymore.
Son of a... All right. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a real honor to welcome to the program someone whose work I have appreciated for years. Yes. He... First, maybe you saw them on Tim and Eric's Awesome Show, or Decker, or On Cinema, At the Cinema, and now Mr. America. Tim Heidecker, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for giving me time during so much. There's so much for you to talk about, I'm sure.
What do you mean?
Insane. Wow, there just seems to be a lot going on, a lot of activity in the news.
Would you say? Just a little bit.
I don't know. It's just, it's crazy, but... Thank you for giving me this opportunity to shamelessly plug my garbage.
I'm going to tell you that I have not been this excited to see a movie since Skyfall was announced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Skyfall turned out to be not good. I went to it, like, for me at that time when my kids were young, to go and take 3 hours to watch it, I was really bummed. But I am so psyched to see your movie. We're going to play the trailer.
Okay.
This is so up, I think, this audience's alley.
Yeah.
But here it is.
All the chips are in on this. Everything's on the line financially, emotionally. Tim Heidecker. And I think we have a very good chance of winning.
I'm running for San Bernardino District Attorney.
Oh, okay.
I'm coming out here talking to voters.
Oh, okay, for DA.
Yes, for District Attorney. I've said that 3 times now.
If you want an outsider to come in and shake things up, because San Bernardino has gotten to be so corrupt. All these numbers, you see that it's just up, 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 and that's all crime.
If you commit a crime on my watch, you're going to jail. Forever. That's the community we want to create.
In large sections of San Bernardino County, Mr. Heidecker is persona non grata.
You have no right to be here after what you did.
I have permission from First Amendment.
He is perceived as a murderer who got away with it.
He disobeyed me. It's murder.
See that justice is done. Convict this individual.
As far as the DA goes, this Rossetti has turned out to be a total rat. And I don't know how you find these people, if you elect them or not, but maybe he'll have some competition next time. Hey, Rossetti. Oh, Vincent Rossetti, district attorney in San Bernardino, is trying to kill me. It's attempted murder happening right here.
I think Tim's running for DA because he just wants to get revenge.
I am district attorney Vincent
Rossetti.
What's happening with the GoPro?
It's GoFundMe. I got it set up. Most of the time, GoFundMe is for people who are, like, sick or poor or starving. I really shouldn't technically be doing this, but...
He's running for district attorney, which is not going to really happen because he's not a lawyer. He doesn't live in San Bernardino.
Hey, Greg, stay out of my movie.
Now that the race is tightening,
can we put this in your window?
We see the rat beginning to cower.
He's hiding in some rat hole.
He has to answer for his crimes.
I can hear to my little dream of everything lives in my mind.
Come on. Starting to feel real.
This is not gonna cut it.
Knowing that it's only a few steps away. If I'm not on the ballot, how am I supposed to compete?
He doesn't have a chance.
From becoming not only district attorney, but hopefully even higher. I hope I have your vote.
That looks so awesome.
Sounded good. It sounds like a good trailer. I'm just listening to it.
It's one of those movies that I feel like you don't even have to see. You can just listen to the whole movie and that's it. tell us, and I should say, like, I watched the, you know, obviously I haven't seen the movie. I've just seen the mm-hmm. these clips, and folks, it's released today on all the major streaming platforms. I see like a little bit of Mike Cernovich in there. In the moments like where, you know, you're holding the selfie stick and claiming that you're being attempted murder. There's Trump in there to some extent. I mean, tell us, like,
I know, where do we start? How do we get into this is the question you're circling around.
Exactly.
How do we approach this? There's so many angles, so many ways to get in. All I can do is try to help.
All right. Well, tell us for those folks who aren't familiar with On the Cinema and At the Cinema, just give us the arc of how the movie, like, sort of like, you know, the basic synopsis.
Yeah. So it's, let me see if I can do it. I should be better at this, but I'm not. We've been doing On Cinema for a while. It's basically like Siskel and Ebert, except, well, in that case, those guys didn't seem to like each other either, but you know, it's sort of this soap opera that's been going on for years where we sort of glibly talk about movies, but really it's a device to tell just crazy stories about my character, who's always kind of getting caught up in some scheme or some pyramid scheme or scam or, you know, and he's just a pretty bad guy who naturally dovetails into the sort of Trump wave and becomes a Trump supporter. And I'm making sure I'm still in the air. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I can still hear.
Okay,
you. No, of course.
You know when you do those calls and suddenly it's just so quiet and you're like, I think I'm just talking to nobody right now.
Well, I can't assure you that there's anybody besides me who is listening, right, but I'm here.
Just every 30 seconds, give me a uh-huh.
All right, I'll give you those. Or just a beep. Maybe we'll just do a beep or something.
Boop. You are still live. So anyway, my character had eventually gotten in trouble with the law for putting on an EDM festival where he handed out vaporizers, which had poisonous content in them, which ended up killing 19 teenagers.
Now we should be clear. We should be clear.
This was before. Yeah, I know. This was done before any of this stuff showed up in the news.
Do you think that they got the idea to use tainted vape stuff from hearing about your movie?
I'm certainly not going to speak on the record about that. That seems incriminating. But no, I mean, you know, I think Greg and I are always kind of paying attention to the some of the subculture stuff going on and noticing when things. I know Greg a few years ago was kind of was really irate about these EDM festivals where kids were overdosing, and it was seemed very unsupervised. And
right,
you know, it just I think we tapped into that, and also vaping was just popping up everywhere, and we're kind of just laughing at the silliness of it. But yeah, those two things kind of crossed paths. And my character was put on trial. He ended up defending himself and was technically we had a hung jury, which appeared as a 5-hour mock trial that appeared on Adult Swim that people can watch. And the result of that was that he decided to run for district attorney of San Bernardino, which is where the trial took place, to oust the current district attorney who tried him as a revenge campaign. So that's the backstory that sets us up for.
And let me just be clear with so that people understand it. So the storyline went along on the show, and then it just sort of jumped mediums into the documentary. Is there a story how do you explain? Do you even address that in the context of the movie?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. It's complicated. It's, you know, we didn't set out to make a movie that was going to come out this way. We kind of went off and said, we'll just make another piece of media. And the way that the trial existed on Adult Swim, we decided to take it from the perspective of if a young filmmaker followed these guys around, you know, mostly the stuff we make in the show is sort of made by us or made by our characters. And we said, it'll be interesting to see how these people would look from an outsider's perspective. And so we created a fictitious filmmaker that would follow us around, and then sort of did our best to set it up for the audience. And we ended up making this thing that felt really funnier than we thought it was going to be, and more kind of about it felt, you know, kind of, I hate to say the word important. Also, I'll say the word very important.
Right. It's two words.
You know, it just felt timely, and maybe that it could play outside of just the audience of the show. Which we're kind of seeing that's happening. Although, you know, some people are going to miss what we're doing. But we set it up in the movie to kind of explain who these characters are. But so it's kind of doing two things. On one level, it's kind of this character study. It's kind of a political satire. It's a look at how, you know, candidates now can probably scoot by without very little experience or without very little aptitude for being in the elected office. But it also shows the comments we've gotten from people that have seen it were like, it was kind of comforting because my character, not to give anything away, my character loses and fails throughout the entire movie. Like there's never, it's never presented as like, oh no, this bad guy is winning, you know, because so it sort of was like a comfort food movie for people that want to see how things ought to be, maybe. You know, some people said it was nice to see this sort of Trumpian, boorish dope lose, you know, throughout the movie. So it's working on that level. And then for the fans of On Cinema, it's chock full of, you know, references and it plays into the narrative of that show on a bigger level as well.
Have you, particularly the On Cinema and then obviously into the movies gets very directly, I guess, associated with the politics of the day. Have you always been, has your work always been sort of politically oriented? I mean, how did you start? Did you start as a stand-up?
Me? No. Eric and I started, we went to film school together and made a lot of shorts. Short films and kind of artsy kind of things, little animations. So we came up that way. We were not political. I don't think, you know, in some ways our show was a little political in that it was very satirical of culture and the corporate, mass marketed hell mall world that we live in. But not, you know, we sort of went the other direction from, you know, the Daily Show kind of commenting on stuff of the day.
Right.
But I don't know. I think in the past 5 to 6 years, I've always been interested in politics and found it important to at least shape my life. But it stayed out of my work. But as you know, listen, the past 5 or 6 years have been insane. And almost it feels almost impossible to divorce it from at least my own creativity. And, you know, some people aren't interested in that, but it's kind of just the direction things go. But, you know, in this movie, people note that we never say the word Donald Trump, and yet it's all over the place, you know?
Right.
So it's not only on our minds, but it's on everybody's minds. And I think artists right now, you know, it's sort of like it would be almost weird to not bring it into your work in some way. So here we are.
And you went to the RNC with Vic Berger too, didn't you? Didn't you take him down there?
I dragged him down there by his curly little head. Said, "You do this. You get it. You go talk to Alex Jones." No, we went to both of them. Yeah, we just went down there with a couple cameras and. I remember he did get to talk to Alex Jones. He got up to him and was asking him about why Chubby Checker isn't in the Hall of Fame. he didn't know what to say to that.
I would imagine. How did you hook up?
I don't know
with
what
that?
I would say.
How did you and Vic hook up?
Well, this is convenient to talk about Vic because he was an early fan of On Cinema and I noticed him. He was making these music videos about characters on Cinema, like these little and full songs that were like about characters from the show. And they were very rudimentary. The songs were actually really good because he's like, I think first and foremost, a really good singer, a songwriter, believe it or not. But he put these videos up and we loved them. And it was still early days with that show and people weren't making that much. Because this community that watches that show, they make a lot of content. Like they make a lot of sort of subsidiary content of the show. They make, you know, art and posters and music and stuff like associated with the show. I don't know what to compare it to. I'm sure there's, you know, some other fandom thing that this is like. But
like maybe people paying right-wing celebrities to do cameo videos to bother others.
In this
that
environment.
Sort of thing can happen.
Right, yeah. Well, or it's like Star Trek or something, you know, where
right.
people like are, you know, live in these worlds, this universe. But I also found out he was from my hometown or sister town. I'm from Allentown. He's from Bethlehem. So we got in touch and he started making stuff for us. And then he went off on his own path. And I've always been trying to, you know, sort of mentor him as I've been mentored by, you know, people like Bob Odenkirk, who found us. Try to give, what do they say? Pay it forward.
Sure.
Do the pay it forward thing. So yeah, that's me and Vic.
The thing I really like about the comedy you do is it really, it doesn't feel like you at all care of, well, I don't want to say care, but
I know
that
you're
just not, too concerned about the audience getting it on some
right.
level. And
yeah,
that's sort of the, you know, back when I was in comedy was sort of the school of comedy that I came from. I mean, it didn't work out well for me, but, but you've seemed to make it work. And I mean, talk about that a little bit. And I wonder also,
yeah.
I'm curious too, because, you know, you're about 10 years younger than me. And when mm-hmm. when you guys came out of film school, there was that was really sort of like at the beginning of, I mean, there was a lot, there was, you know, YouTube and just other video online, which didn't exist, you know, when I
no.
basically came up. And there was a lot of outlets
right.
for that.
Yeah. Let me take the first question first.
They're related, Tim. They're related.
Yeah, they are related. I'm going to see if I can just transition from one to the other without you even noticing.
Okay.
We're finding this whenever, you know, I agree. When we're making stuff, I usually, you know, if it's me or Eric or if it's me or Greg, we're really just making stuff for ourselves and for each other to laugh. And that's how we just don't think about the audience, you know, ever. And we're not trying to not make anyone laugh. We're just doing what we think is funny and not doing focus groups about, you know, what's funny these days, you know? So what happens is you get a lot of people that, as a lot of culty comedy works, you know, you get things like when I was a kid, Mystery Science Theater was a big thing for me where I felt like they were in my brain. They were making me laugh and they were just dialed into what I think was thought was funny or something like Spinal Tap. It was so specific and so well executed. And you know, that's the kind of fans we have who are just really just are, take it very personally and really connect with it. But when we put something like this out into the world and it gets out into the mainstream where you have big, you know, mainstream outlets reviewing it, you realize that, oh, there is not an appetite for this in a large part. Like, you know, there's somebody watched the movie and reviewed it and said it was laugh free. And it was not, and it was like, you know, intolerable. And how dare they, you know, that kind of attitude. And it's something I can't really do anything about, but it is funny that, you know, we're never trying to make something for a mass audience. Not because we don't want a mass audience. We would love it if we just had, you know, we were the most popular thing. But we just never want to sacrifice, you know, what we want at the core of what we want to do. And so that's where it comes out. But for the people that love it, you know, it connects to, I don't really understand why, or I don't understand how, I mean, to me, I watch it and go, this is just funny. It's a comedy. There's, you know, it's basically a bad guy and he's slipping on a banana peel for 90 minutes, like core, you know, comedy concepts. It's not that it's not that crazy to me, but apparently it is. And then I will, this is a little more clunky to go into your second question, which is, yes, we've been able to directly, and this is partly why we're able to have an audience where we put this movie out last on Wednesday in theaters, in like 120 theaters, and, you know, thousands of people came out and saw it, and it, like, did well. And the Magnolia, who put it out, was like, hey, we had a good night last night. Like, your fans came out and they had a blast. And so you can exist out there as a fringe comedian or as sort of a alternative comedian or something and do okay, because I don't know. I think like the idea of sort of popular mass culture person in, especially in comedy, seems kind of harder to figure out. I don't know if you saw that clip that was going around. It was the VMAs this year.
No.
And Sam, this is the craziest thing. I didn't watch who watches the VMAs that we know? Like, nobody.
I was not aware that it was still going on, but I will take your
They had this comedian come out to host the VMAs, okay? The host of the VMAs was this guy, and I'm going to say his name wrong, but it's like Salvador Pasquale, or he was like this kind of Andrew Dice Clay kind of comedian, like a very Italian Jersey dressed like a guy. He's walking down the street kind of deal, you know, like real. And the thing is, he's a very popular comedian. He's got he sold out Madison Square Garden, and he's on Netflix with a special, and he goes on the Today Show. But he came out just to host this thing. And you could tell right away that most of the people in that room did not know who he was. And he started, you gotta watch it. It's crazy. He starts going into, like, just so you know, MTV has set up a safe space for people who are gonna be triggered. And like that kind of stuff. It's wild. And the VMA, especially the artists, like whoever, I couldn't tell you.
Hold on, we got a little clip of it. Let's play. It's Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yeah,
Scalco.
Yeah.
Okay.
And God, you know, God bless him. I don't have anything. But it was sort of that thing that Like, is who knows who's even famous anymore? Like,
right. You know what I always love?
No, that's true. That is, I mean, you know, I want to play this clip of him, but well, let's play this clip and then we'll talk about that phenomenon. Cause that to me, I think is, that dynamic is what I think has been so helpful to comedy and to just broadly to entertainment. Mm-hmm. But here, hold on, let's just hear this for a second.
MTV, what they're doing is they notice that we're living in ultra sensitive time, right? So if you feel triggered or you feel offended by anything I'm saying up here or anything the musical artists are doing, they're providing a safe space backstage where you get some stress balls and a blankie. And also, Lil Nas X brought his horse, which will, horse is backstage, which will double as an emotional support animal. So if you'd like to talk to your ushers, they will send you back to where that's happening. Personally, I would remove you from the arena, put you in your car, and send you home, but they opted with the safe space.
Yeah, I will defend Dave Chappelle till the day I die. But that's well, what I like about this. I just have to say is every time somebody like this does something, we both critique them from the left, I guess. And then we go into the last form of acceptable, like, ethnic comedy, which is, hey, I'm a goomba asshole.
Well, no, anti-Italian racism is real and it's fine.
I've got a ridiculous 80s jacket on.
This guy just, like, is used to walking into venues where everybody shows up from Long Island, all due respect to Long Island, and just the idea of somebody on stage saying, like, safe space with, like, a little bit of, like, lilt as if it's like, we're on the same. And he must be used to, like, I remember at one point, Benjamin and I and a couple of guys in Boston wrote for Anthony Clark. Do you remember him? He was a stand-up.
And no, I don't remember him.
Sort of southerny stand-up who was from Boston. And we wrote a joke, Pepsi Schmepsy, for him. I think that was the joke. And it just felt like he wasn't comfortable saying it. Nobody wanted to hear that. It was completely.
Yeah.
So what's interesting to me about, like, what you do, and this is what I was getting at with the different sort of, like, platforms that exist now, even like Adult Swim, where you would have 10-minute shows, like, that didn't exist on TV 15, 20 years ago, really. And and there's so many different ways in which to reach an audience that you can be very big in a community of people and have a huge career and to provide a platform so that, you know, sort of more mainstream stuff can see you. So you end up acting in, big films.
Yeah.
That to me seems it's created a whole host of opportunities and we just have much better comedy and entertainment, broadly speaking, because of it.
Yeah. And you know, we keep figuring out different ways of doing it. This is a new way of doing it, which is, we can do a night where our audience is sent, mostly our audience can go out wherever they, you know, in the 120 cities on Wednesday and spend this communal experience, almost like when you go out and do a live show, you know, be around similar minded people. And some, like Rolling Stone, was like, why didn't they just cut this up into little small bits and put it on Adult Swim? Well, the evidence is that hundreds or whatever, tons of people came out to be together, and they all had this fun, different experience. It's like it proved its own point that it worked, you know, and that it did feel like a movie to see with an audience. And that's kind of not, you know, comedies, I feel like we forget that they're really fun to see in a room together and play off each other's reactions to it. And we always say, like, you got to go see Skyfall, you got to go see Batman in the theaters because of all the visual effects. But I think comedy is when they're funny, and that's, you know, that's becoming a problem as well. But
Skyfall sucked.
Are fun to see with a group of people. So,
oh man, I remember the Skyfall saga.
Yeah, no, that was Christ. It was an ugly time for me.
I finally get time to.
I was mad. I was mad for a long time. It kept me out of the theaters.
Get to go out.
This is the first movie I've been excited about since then because I'm so afraid.
Skyfall was.
See, I always go see the Mission Impossible movies in the theater because those seem to. They're very silly, but they deliver on what you want to see on the big screen. Tom Cruise jumping out of buildings and stuff.
Let me ask you this. What kind of comedy? You say you have Mystery Science 3000. What else were you into when you were young? And then dovetail, two-part question. Does it hold up in your mind? Just comedy, just broadly speaking. Like, my sense is that comedy does not is not durable. And I'm thinking, like, even the stuff that I made, I look at and I'm like, that's not funny anymore. It's not even remotely funny.
I just want to know.
Think comedy holds up that well. Generally, sorry, I did interrupted you.
Sorry,
please.
I just want to know who that Maniscalco bit was even supposed to be for. Like, the teenagers watching MTV?
He made a little Nas X reference.
It's just funny to them. Like, right. and then if these kids think you're old and lame and don't laugh at you, then you're like, oh, triggered much, you snowflakes.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of issues with that. But
those kids were fucking triggered.
Go ahead.
I think, you know, there's a little bit of nostalgia and comfort in watching things that, you know, I could probably watch Spinal Tap a couple times a year just because it's so entertaining and it's so meaningful to me. I mean, people ask like what your influences are, and it's like, well, I was just a kid living in the 90s, in the 80s and 90s in Pennsylvania. I had access to what everybody else had access to, but, you know, definitely Spinal Tap, definitely The Simpsons, Saturday Night Live, you know, early Conan O'Brien. You know, I was just like your average comedy nerd. You know, the Zucker Brothers. I mean, what was better than the Naked Gun movies?
Right.
You know, like, you know, those maybe you're a little older than me and that didn't kill for you. But for me, I was just at the right age where that stuff was just like more important to me than almost anything for a little bit. It was like massive and I cared about it for, you know, whatever reason. Just really resonated with me.
Why do you think comedy doesn't hold up in the same way?
Well, certainly, like, a lot of comedy that's very, you know, relevant to the moment. You know, if you're going to watch an old episode of Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher, there's probably not a lot of reason to do that. Or yours, whatever. You know, any show that's talking about the news is not going to be that interesting. And comedy, like, is mostly about surprising you and you know, like, it's like watching a baseball game that you've seen already. There's not a lot of reason to do that. But the first time a joke hits, it's usually the best time because you're not expecting it. And so I guess that's why it might not age well. But some stuff ages just fine.
Yeah.
I think we tried to make Tim and Eric as a sort of like an ageless thing.
Right.
You know, because it was a nefarious, it was a nebulous kind of look to it. You know, like it looked like it could have been made 15 years ago or 30 years ago or what, you know. But even that, I could look back on that and go, oh, this feels dated. And I didn't think it would, but of course it does. Like, everything feels dated at some point. It seems like impossible to avoid that.
Well, the movie is Mr. America. Folks can go to MrAmericaFilm.com right now. And
yeah, in the United States right now, unfortunately, the United States and Canada, we're working on some international deals. But I'm sure you have some international listeners. And I just
they can definitely use like some type of proxy. I have a feeling that they could go in and
these people know how to get around.
Oh, they know how to get around all of that. Believe me, Tim.
But don't torrent it.
Jesus. That's right. Or at the very least, if you do, send a check to Tim.
Yes, direct.
Tim, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Big fan. Can't wait to see the movie. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Sam. Great talking to you. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Hopefully. Bye.
Just thinking of the relevance of Bill Maher asking Pauly Shore whether or not he, like, supported like PNTR with China or something.
One of the things that when I saw this, I was like, the thing that I like about this, in fact, if you go, see if you can go to like Amazon right now and search for Who's the Caboose. And because the, one of the things I really like about the work that Tim does is that it's it has its own logic that does not necessarily fit outside of that world on some level. And like I said, like I did a similar thing to far less success with far less success. And I think if is it up there? I think if you play watch the trailer. Now this is now understand the movie. The movie came out in 1996. I pause it for 1 second. And so this is how what I thought at the time in terms of like marketing. Like, okay, we did the movie. And then 8 years later, we did the sequel, pilot season, with the same characters. This trailer is going to take place like 5 or 6 years after that, which is when I shot it. So I think I shot this in 2010 with Dorsey in our first office for this show. And the idea was like when we first moved into the office, so it must've been like probably 9 years ago. And I thought, okay, here is the, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it as if my character in the movie got a hold of the footage and was selling it on his own to people. And he was being sued by the like movie association, and that this was a deposition that was prepared for that. Like, and now when I say this out loud, I realize it sounds insane.
It's like kind of a lot.
Like the idea that this is a good way to sell this movie is ridiculous, but it made perfect sense to me. And I'm like, this is funny. But it was really, I mean, you watch it and I realize like it was funny to me, but I can't see how
there's some growth here.
Anybody there's could possibly
here, I appreciate the
get
growth.
What I was doing here. But that's what I did.
Yeah,
they'll
did
watch it, and
it
then it will be it'll be a fake deposition,
it.
And then I mean, actually, we should really prepare
but
the inventory.
It was
because
consistent this, with the show. Here, watch.
You're not very good at this. You're not asking good questions. I mean, I've actually been a star in multiple documentaries, and you're not good at asking questions.
This is not a documentary. It's a legal deposition. You're being sued.
Right, legal deposition, sued. Okay, yeah, that part I knew.
What job do you have now?
Now, well, actually, it's funny that you should say that, because 15 years ago, I had multiple jobs. I was a comedian slash performance artist slash artist slash writer, actually, and director back in New York City. That's actually what the documentary was sort of about.
I like working with Susan here, because it gives her a chance to, you know, work with me and do stuff that's more pure.
That's actually back when I was dating Susan Underman. Yes, the Susan Underman, the famous Susan Underman. Before she was famous. Before she moved to Los Angeles, California. Are you interviewing her for this? Because she will probably want to talk to me.
I love Max, but my manager says I have to go out there, so I've got to go out there.
But Hollywood, I don't like that scene because there's a lot of losers and winners.
People read, oh, you get $100,000 because you don't get $100,000. Think you make money in here? You don't make a dime, man.
Hi, I'm Gwen Tina Robinson. I met you at the Disney thing.
Well, I got her with Creative Artists Agency. You're welcome.
My pilot quote is now up to $78,000.
How about the other night, huh? How about those ladies? They were doing all right here and here.
Stacey Papadouski, Papadouski, Stacey Papadouski, you're Stacey Papadouski.
It's all in a documentary called Who's the Caboose? I know, dumb name. It wasn't my idea, but I was going to sell some copies.
That's why you're being sued. We've put out a DVD.
Oh, you put out a DVD of Who's the Caboose. Oh, good. You know what you should do? Think about it. This is my idea, but you should put it on something called iTunes. You put it on iTunes. Okay, good. That's okay. Who's the Caboose is on iTunes and DVD. All right. Am I going to be making any money from that?
Okay, so it doesn't make any sense. No one could possibly understand that for some reason we've cut in and the deposition has absolutely nothing to do with the movie. In fact, takes place 20 years after the movie.
That was when, remember when I used to do you as like Ralph Cramden sometimes, where you'd just be like, Alice, when we do the 20 years from now court deposition scene on the film that most people haven't seen to begin with, we better stock up on the DVD.
You know what movie I want to see is a compilation.
Get ready for summer vacation, Alice, because exactly. They're going to be flying.
Exactly. The biggest problem I'm going to have is how am I going to get all the postage
the
to sell
the problem is, Alice, is I don't know if this will spit all upstate. And the velocity of the amount of orders might be logistically problematic. When they see the deposition scene in the fake follow-up to the fake sequel to the movie they didn't see, those DVD boxes are going to go flying, Alice.
The movie I want to see is a webcam compilation of everybody who happened to upon that trailer without any background.
Yes, exactly.
Watch that. Like,
that, like, honestly, that could be the single worst trailer ever produced for anything on Amazon.
It has a lot of quality.
I mean, now that I have quality. All the background, I appreciate it. It's like
it's a
grower, not a shower.
If I had the opportunity to sit with everyone who stumbled upon that trailer and explain it to them, I'm convinced that I would get like a 25% click-through rate. But as it stands now, I think it's probably somewhere around like 0.0005 who watch that trailer and go like, oh, I want to watch this movie. And then even after you watch the movie, you still can't understand the trailer. Right? You could look and watch the entire movie. Then you could watch the sequel, which is not available anywhere, and you still wouldn't understand the trailer.
All I can tell you, Alice, is after they watch that trailer, start looking to where you want to go in Sardinia. Because it's going
to
be flying.
And now I'm too embarrassed to like call the people. Like, I don't even know how to get in touch with, like, I don't know how to replace it. So I just said, F it. Leave it up there. I don't care.
I mean, maybe. It's kind of a standalone piece in a way.
That's the thing. I wanted to create another sort of standalone sort of thing that was funny. And it was funny to me. It's just that was why I was getting to that point about what I thought was impressive about what Tim has done, because, you know, he's doing that and it's funny and decipherable to other people.
Yeah, look, the real heads, they know. They like it. The Sam Cedar completionists, you know who you are.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right. We got to take a quick break and head into the fun half. We got a couple of clips to talk about and a couple of more stories.
Got a late-breaking Ben Shapiro clip.
Do we? We'll take a look at that in the fun half.
Also, Donald Trump, in his infinite wisdom and, you know, counterintuitive anti-militarism that we hear about, is deploying more troops to Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
That's just been announced.
Because Hillary would get us in World War III.
He's bringing the troops home. I don't know why the left is so confused.
He's bringing them to another part of Syria. And the only function that they're serving in a positive role is Syria. They're not going to be there anymore. I don't know what's so angry.
I thought the point was you like...
Wait. But now he's going to support Muslims. And I thought the left loved Muslims. It's very confusing.
Yes. Folks, don't forget to subscribe to the AM Quickie. It's now on its own feed. You can go to amquickie.com to sign up, or you can just find it on iTunes. You can find it on Stitcher or what's the other stuff? Spotify. It's there. Try it on your Alexa. And if you try it on your Alexa, then email us and tell us if you found it. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And reminder, this program exists because of our members. Our members support this program to the tune of 90, I don't know what it is, in the 90s. I didn't get the report from accounting from the CFO this week. But your support as a member makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And a reminder, lastly, knowing your dog's breed mix can help you provide a better quality of life. And the Embark Dog DNA Test is the best-in-class dog DNA test. It's developed by doctors and veterinarians. Embark tests for over 250 breeds and 170 genetic health conditions so that you can know what to watch out for your dog, how to feed your dog, care for your dog, make sure they have a happy, healthy life. And it's only research-grade dog DNA test kit on the market. To save 15% on a dog DNA test, go to EmbarkVet.com. EmbarkVet.com. Use the promo code MAJORITY. Michael, today is Friday. That means that some other time during the week, it was Tuesday.
Indeed.
What happened?
Debate on China with Sagar and Jetty, and much more on TMBS. Check it out. Michael Brooks Show on YouTube, TMBS, and patreon.com/TMBS. Get your tickets to see us in Philly, November 23rd. They're starting to pick up again as we are almost a month out. TMBS is Wednesday next week instead of Tuesday. And Ryan Grimm is going to be in studio with us breaking down the race and the debate and probably talking drug war stuff.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, remember when I started talking about the contradictions and limitations of social democracy in one country and everyone was like, what the hell is Jamie talking about? Oh, well, I brought in a very heavy hitter named Ross Wolf, two-time returning guest, to talk about the communist case for opening and ultimately abolishing the borders, and how only global communist revolution is going to enable us to avoid a descent into eco-fascism and horror in the long term. And it was a good conversation. I wanted to nail it, especially, you know, you don't always get a do-over on things like that. So check it out if you're interested. Also this weekend, holy shit, tomorrow.
Oh, man.
Pardon my French, but I'm very excited. I had to take two CBD dropperfuls of CBD tincture last night to get to sleep. True story. It is the Goth Socialist Variety Hour at Littlefield, NYC, with the Antifada and Poddam America, as well as special guests Matt Chrisman, Virgil Texas, Leslie Lee III, and Comrade Barbie. And I'm really excited about it, so I hope that someone listening is going to come. I hope a lot of people listening are going to come.
Go to the show, Matt.
Any of you guys coming?
I'm going to be out of town. I almost was in town, but now I'm going to be out of
town. No, I was going to shout you out. I had a whole bit planned.
I wanted to go.
Next time.
Next time.
He's secretly Comrade Barbie. Sorry. My bad.
Matt.
Yeah, Literary Hangover. I've done some recent episodes on James Fenimore Cooper and a feminist sort of answer to him in Literary Maria Child's Hobomok. Also, I'm going to be talking about the largest witch hunt in American history, the Salem 1692.
What they did in Salem to the women was a disgrace.
It wasn't just 692, folks. Cotton Mather corrupt. It's the worst cover-up ever. We're going to be talking about all that stuff. So look forward to that.
It was misogyny. It was an irrational outbreak of misogyny. If you look at history, it's pretty unbelievable.
Your brain's going to freeze like that.
Folks, see you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already. Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
This guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.